You're listening to The Art of Imperfect Adulting. I'm your host, Amy Stone. Here, I share stories from real people navigating the adventure that I call adulting. Are you ready? Me too. Let's do this. Hello, friends. Today, I'm introducing you to my guest, Amy McGrath. My name is Amy too. It's a little confusing, but anyway. We talk about her relationship with her kids, and this is a super personal story. Before we begin, I want to share a couple things. First, I think that when we hear somebody else's family story, it can be really easy to evaluate their situation by comparing it to either our actual personal family or even our idealized version of or vision of what we think a family could or should be. And this is sometimes called a veil or a lens or a bias, and I think we all have them. It is my own personal opinion, and you are welcome to disregard it, that it can be very helpful to try not to do that. Now, that's hard, and actually, it might be impossible, but maybe that doesn't mean we don't try to do it anyway. The other thing is that in every story that I share, what I'm actually sharing is somebody's personal experience. I don't fact check these. I believe what people tell me, and you can either do that or not. It's up to you. In groups, including families, whenever something happens, there are actually multiple versions of that event and that experience. The one liner here is that there are two sides to every story, but in a family, there can be six or seven versions depending on how many people are involved. And one thing that I think I've learned, that I think I believe, is that when it comes to a personal experience, in a lot of ways, everybody involved is right when they tell their story. So now that I've gotten that off my chest, if you're ready, I'm ready. So let's do this. Amy McGrath, welcome to The Art of Imperfect Adulting.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here today, Amy.
Yeah. Are you ready for a chat today?
I am. Yeah, I've been really looking forward to it.
That's good. Okay. So before we dive into the topic, I want to give the audience a chance to get to know you a little bit better. I actually am lucky enough to know you a little bit in person. We've worked together in the past, which is really nice. We're both named Amy, which is a little confusing. But go ahead and tell the audience a little bit about you outside of work, outside of family. Share with us maybe a little bit about a hobby you have, or if you have pets, what their names are, as much as or as little as you want.
All right. Great. Well, I am a live music enthusiast, so I love going to concerts. That's where I feel most alive. And I happen to follow Blue October around a good bit, and they're coming back to Florida in a couple months, so I'm excited about that. And I do have a fur baby named Blue. He is going to be 2 years old on June 1st. He's a black golden doodle, and each dog I've had, so he's my fourth. And each dog I've had, I can't believe that I could love the next dog, like even nearly as much as the last. And he's just a wonderful companion and loves the beach, which I live real close to. And it's been great for us. He came along right at the time when I was losing my previous dog, Bella. So he's been fantastic. And we love all things outdoorsy.
Fantastic. And you said he's a black doodle?
Yeah, black golden doodle. So his mom was black and dad was blonde, and she had a litter of eight puppies, and only one of them was blonde and the other seven were black.
Oh, that is
So,
very, very
yeah.
cool. I have a preference that I don't like to have pets that have a more intensive hair care routine than mine. And so I don't know if I'll ever have a doodle.
Yeah, you're really hitting on something that's a great point there, because I thought my hair was hard to take care of because it's long and curly. And yeah, I learned very quickly on, and kind of made a joke out of it at times, but a girlfriend bought me a professional grooming tool for Blue. So I thought I would just, you know, put on my groomer hat and try to groom my dog. And I made him look horrible a couple times while trying to get his three coats under control. Yes, that's three coats, two plus an undercoat. And now I have resigned to the fact that he goes every 5 weeks and I go every six for hair.
That's so funny. Pretty much everybody I know who has pets has gone through a phase where you try and do the grooming, and everybody was going through it in lockdown, even, everywhere. But I had a friend who, I forget what kind of dog it was, and they were trying to do the grooming, but the fur, the hair between the pads of the paws was, they were really struggling with it. So the poor dog was sliding all over the house, and it was getting the trash. It was so funny. It was just really, really cute. And then they settled into taking him back to the groomer, resigning to the fact that it is a specialized trade. And tip well, tip your groomers.
Yes, he's definitely a designer dog. I did not realize I was getting a designer dog.
All right, now to get to the topic of the day, you proposed the topic of making a choice, which was stepping back from your relationship with your kids. And we're going to talk about that. So, this is a deeply personal topic. And I actually want to start by saying thank you for being willing to share at least some of the story with people, because I think a lot of people go through ups and downs in their relationships and their families. And talking about some of the hardships between parents and kids, and specifically moms and kids, is something that doesn't get talked about as much as maybe it could. So thank you for that.
Yes, thank you, Amy, and thanks. I'm hoping by being able to share about it today that I'll be able to help people that are have been in the same place or a similar situation know that they're not alone.
Yeah, because
That's really
that
important.
there's a lot of societal pressure on the relationship between parents and kids, and which it just is a fact of life, right? But one of the things that can happen is that when you fall outside of what you perceive as normal, there's a lot of self pressure that can come collapsing down. And this happens in all kinds of situations. This happens to people when your kid is not getting straight A's in school, or if your kid is not in mainstream sports. So this is not just to this story and this support, I hope, reaches out to people who are feeling like they're not measuring up in any part of this relationship. All right, so let's back up a little bit and talk about the time frame of your life. Little topic, time frame of your life, right?
Time frame.
Once upon a time, you got married. How old were you when you married your husband?
I was 24.
24 years old. And how long were you guys married?
We were married 11 years and together 17.
17 years. So you dated for 5 to 6 years and then you were married
Yeah, we
for
were.
11.
20 or 19, I think, when we first started dating.
Young babies,
Yes,
babies.
babies.
So you didn't stay married forever. So how long has it been since you got divorced?
We got divorced in 2010, so it's been 15 years.
15 years. So you've been divorced almost as long as you guys were together
Yes.
dating. All right, so that's a benchmark. All right. All right, so one of the things I've learned in my time as a human being is that people don't actually get divorced when everything is going perfectly, rainbows and unicorns. It's not usually the story, I gotta say. Without getting personal, right? Because that's not what this is about. Do you want to share any of the things that were going on for you, not for anybody else, but for you that worked up to the decision of getting divorced? Like, what was going on for you? What were
Sure.
you like? What was going on that was a factor in the relationship being
Well, I
better
think
now?
something that kind of is a thread throughout my story is about so in 2002, I had my son, and I had been working full time since college graduation, and there was a lot of pressure to stay home, and I proposed to my boss at that time that maybe I could do something from home, and I was the first one doing that, and he accepted. But I think my life kind of changed when our life changed when we had our baby, not just because it was so wonderful, but also because I think looking back on it now, and you gave the years there that I really have had a lot of time to look back. My perception at that time was that I had to stay home. My husband was employed and was doing well, and even though I knew I loved to work and I needed to be around people, I made the choice to stay home, and I did still bring in some income. But my personality began to change at that point. I really loved being a mom, but I really struggled with being home all day.
Okay.
And it just wasn't the right fit for me, and I didn't though fight against it. I just kind of became quieter and quieter, and I had a very noisy spouse and who was very outspoken. And after a while, and then we had our second child, I actually kind of slipped into a life of over drinking and kind of trying to numb myself from what I was feeling because I wasn't being authentically true to who I was meant to be. I was a really good mom, but I equated motherhood with staying at home because that's was the pressure at the time when I was having my kids that that's what you do, especially if you have a spouse that is successful.
Right.
And I had been successful prior to the kids and I had gotten a master's degree, so I felt very conflicted for many years. And it eventually there was dislike, became a big factor between the kid's father and I. And we since we were together those 16 years, we probably had eight that were really good, and then the last eight were really tough. And then I just knew that I didn't want to be married anymore. I never anticipated it being anything more than that, than just a divorce, and that, I'd have the kids and he'd see the kids, and that's kind of how it would go. I never really dreamt what would happen.
Okay, so there were some things. One is, and this is an experience that a lot of people go through, the reality of the shift in your life when you bring something like parenting in, and the shocking disappearance of your life before and the options that you have, right? I talked to a lot of people about that. So that's something that a lot of people go through. And then coping mechanisms that have a stronger impact on your life than others. And one of those that's really, really famous is introducing a substance use pattern to try and get through. I happen to be one of those people who believes that it's very helpful to look at, what is driving the choice to numb out, not just the cause of what people are doing, but everybody is, I'm not a counselor for that. That's just my personal opinion. But I did want to give you a chance to talk about that. So I want to allow you a chance to give people some backstory on how the divorce went, but I also want to be very careful that we're not casting other people into the story because it's just a conversation between you and me. On a scale of 1 to 10, with 1 being easy peasy rainbows and unicorns, and 10 being high conflict, like you are living through a nonstop episode of the Jerry Springer show, how did your divorce go?
Like a 12.
A 12 on a 1 to 10 scale. All right, very good. I actually have not heard very many stories of truly peaceful divorce. Those that I have, they usually are, there's not kids involved. They're at a point where things are different and they do it them by themselves. 12 is pretty normal, in the way most people describe it. It's not a pleasant process, wasn't designed to be pleasant. And so after the divorce, were there obstacles in the way of you continuing the relationship as it had been before with your kids?
There were my ex-husband had reconnected with someone from his past, and they had been in a relationship unbeknownst to me for a little while. So he ended up marrying her within the week of our divorce, and I didn't know about her until way into our separation. I was busy getting myself used to being on my own, and I was exploring sobriety and recovery. And a lot of our past kind of, or a lot of my way of dealing with things kind of ended up playing out negatively as we progressed in the divorce. I didn't realize that. He would kind of ask her to become my kid's mom in response to him not believing that I was equipped to parent them. So we had a really bad custody battle that went on for 4 years and hundreds of thousands of dollars spent. But in the end, he won full custody, and we were living just less than a mile apart from each other. But during that time of trying to see the kids, and of course in those 4 years, all the visits and everything, they were very much groomed to be wary of me, and to be kind of on their P's and Q's when they were on visits. You know, they had a cell phone that was, I think my son had it when he was like 7, and we didn't discuss it, those kind of things. So they were trying to find me doing things that could be taken back to dad. And I know this sounds awful, but it really was. And unfortunately, they were put in the position of having to kind of, you know, watch out for me and report back on what was going on. And there were some false accusations made, and then protective services was brought in, and all of that is behind me and was all dropped and unfounded. But it was just roadblocks. When you mentioned roadblocks, there were hurdles to get beyond. And one of them that as we get to the end of the story will be interesting, but one of the roadblocks was seeing another woman raising my children, living in my home, changing all of the paint and fixtures and raising my kids at the same time as I was just a mile down the road, living in the school district, had bought a house, had a full-time job, but I was running into major issues with them as a cohesive front when I was just navigating this life on my own with my kids at that point.
It sounds really hard and really unpleasant. If you had to choose three words to describe how you were feeling then, living through that situation and that amount of separation and that amount of obstacles with your kids, what would you choose?
Sad, very, very sad, angry, and oh, that's a good question, Amy. The third one would just be kind of like complete defeat.
Okay, defeated.
I never, I couldn't really ever get my feet under me enough to understand like what was actually happening. It felt like when we would go to court, I'd had an attorney and gone through everything, but it felt like I was getting run over by a truck every time I was in court. It just was a completely different outcome than I even thought was possible. And I was very hopping between lawyer and lawyer, and noticed, you know, my ex had a consistent lawyer all the way through the process, and I was kind of hopping around just wondering, you know, why things were going the way they were. So he had a lot of influence in the city where we lived, so was able to kind of use that to his advantage in the court of law, unfortunately.
Okay. So to give everybody a reference, how much contact do you have now with your kids?
I don't have any contact with them yet.
Yes, and you're always hopeful that you will. So how
Yes,
many years,
so
so the divorce was 4 years.
yep.
How many years have you been, how many years did you apply really struggling hard with this and pushing back against it and advocating through the legal system and personally? How long
So it
have
would
you been
have
doing? Yeah.
it so it was 2010, through just it was very close, end of 2018. So the 4 years during the divorce, and then almost 5 of when, now we were living, I was living a mile down the road, and as I mentioned, he had gotten full custody with me having, you know, the other half of that, which just means that they would live with him, but they would come and stay with me, you know, every other weekend and every other one night a week. And that was kind of shocking to me as a mom to begin with, that that's all I
Yeah.
was going to quote unquote get. But I'd also been through the ringer with the court, and knew, you know, this is at least what I was, we were going to end the fighting. So I was very relieved to be entering into that part where I knew the schedule. I knew it was enforceable. And within a week of that decision being made, he made a decision to move to Nashville, where the his wife's parents lived. So he made a work change, but unbeknownst to me, it was out of state. So that threw me again for another loop of now that we have this order that I understand and all I can work by, he's moving them a 7-hour drive out of state. So that was kind of the next step in that. At that point, I had moved. I went to live kind of halfway in between for a little while and landed with near my parents for a bit, and then I moved back up to Pennsylvania, which is where my family's from, where I'm from originally, and I made visits to see them constantly. And unfortunately, there were times when my ex wouldn't meet me halfway, so I would go down and see my parents, and then the kids would come there, but it immediately became difficult to practice the legal orders when he moved out of state. So I really doubled up my efforts so that I could still see the kids, and I would drive from Pennsylvania to Nashville. And this is when things really started to get difficult because as the kids got older, they were 7 and 4 when this all started. So as they started to get older, the visits just became a little bit more challenging where they didn't want to come with me.
Right.
They wouldn't want to stay overnight because they also had, they their stepmom really did do a great job of making them feel, a part of that family so much because she had come in with 2 daughters of her own. But they really didn't want to leave their house. They didn't have a desire really to know me, to see me. They had been told things about me that felt uncomfortable to them. And I really pushed to see. And as the years went by, the visits got less and less. And whenever I would visit, we would go to a counselor. And I was very encouraged by that, except that it was the only time my kids ever went to a counselor. So I had been asking, please have the kids in therapy, and
Yeah.
I'm hoping that that's going on. But instead, it became, we only have to go to counseling when mom comes to town. So everything kind of became very toxic and unfortunate between, I was losing touch as my kids were getting a little bit older and getting a little bit of knowing themselves. I was losing touch with them.
Right. And that's actually a significant thing. That is the time. 14 is the time where kids are developing their own identity and pulling away from all the adults in their lives. And we want that for them, right? We want our kids to grow up, but it is a very hard thing for many adults to live through because they are pulling apart, right? They are pulling apart. And even harder for people who are starting from a spot of not having as much connection, time connection, as they might have wanted. One of the things that I think is really valuable about the story that you're sharing is that I don't think I've ever talked to an adult who's gone through divorce who, even if they have completely amicable co-parenting and completely unicorn level peace and harmony in the life, who doesn't feel that hardship of going from living in the same home with their children 24/7 to the split. It is something that even if people want it, I've never met anybody who doesn't struggle with it. And so talking about that and bringing that into the light is helpful because one of the weird things about this process as somebody who looks at it as an outsider, you've gone through it, is that you hire these people to help you through it. But what they're helping you with is just the mechanics of it, just the mechanics of it. And the people who will come in and say, oh, yeah, this is hard. It's really going to suck. You don't even meet them till it's done, till it's done. The industry is upside down. It's upside down. It's so weird. But all right, so lots and lots of years, you're living your life. You're living your life. You're making your changes. What was the impact of You don't have to tell us all of the details, but if you can sort of picture it, like the impact on your financial budget trying to do all these things, your mental health trying to navigate and maintain these relationships and do all of this stuff when this big piece of your family is in such flux. What was going on with you there?
I appreciate you asking that because that was really hard. And after spending so much time and effort and money in court, that was part of the relief of having it all decided. That's what I was expecting to feel. But I really, it affected my work. It affected financials because I remember in particular one job I had where I was managing a huge staff of over 100 because we had temps and things at this time too, but of a distribution company. And it was the holidays and we were a gift basket company. And I'd worked, every day for like 35 days, 12-hour shifts. And then when Christmas came, after Christmas, we had a couple days off. So I got in the car, jumped in, ran down to Nashville. I was exhausted. The kids were with me. And then they went home to their dad that night, and then we're going to come back the next day. And they complained to their dad that I was so tired and that it seemed like anything I was trying, or if I was just me and being myself, it was looked at to be construed, it was construed as something negative. I had a lot of time with the kids too, where we'd have, a fantastic day and we'd do really fun stuff. And then I'd get a report back from their dad saying that they didn't have any fun. Why are you taking them there? What are you doing with them there? They just want to stay home. Well, they get bored at home. They want to go out. So I was always trying to, and kind of keep my, to be honest, my anxiety at a lower level when I was with them because I was so concerned too about the what's going on when they go home or what are they gonna, it was just a very, very, very stressful situation that I didn't know. And I was moving on with my life. I did have a good job and I was really trying, I was working on myself. I went through 3 very difficult years, but I'm so grateful for them. Was just talking about it this morning of going through some trauma therapy and really working on myself and trying to understand, who I was as a person, why the birth of my son and the whole working thing kind of got under my skin so much so that I could figure out some of the issues I had and what, where were they coming from and how could I, learn from them and show up differently in my life for my children.
Yeah,
So I was
and for
doing all
yourself,
that work.
hopefully.
Yes, and for myself.
Yeah, I was watching cheesy television last night, a Taylor Sheridan show, which he makes all of the shows. Like he made Yellowstone. There, I'd say clearly he has never slept in his entire life. Like I don't know how he produced. Anyway, that's a joke. But the lioness, one of the characters, works real hard. She comes home from traveling. And she her kids are like real resistant when she comes. This is just a scene in a fiction show, not like real, but it's like interesting because it was like this was pushback from her, these fictional kids in this, that they were not ready to connect with this person because she's not there as much as it takes to do that. And so this is a trope. This is a thing that happens in real life that shows in fiction, shows up in fiction. It shows up. It's interesting because it's canonized really well, and in like a loving way with the fathers who the 1950s dad who worked all the time who wasn't home, and so he was benevolent and nice. The mother stayed home. The reality of people living with it is a little different, I think, definitely different. And it happens to everybody. It happens to everybody, which is just the thing that I want to like throw in there. That's my opinion. I think it happens. So. At this point, you described that you do not have any contact with your kids at this exact point in your life. Would you describe this stepping back as a choice you made for yourself, or more like accepting something that at this point in time is not available for you to change right now?
I like the way you asked that because that's exactly what it was. It was accepting. The last time that I saw them in person was in 2018, and I had gone down for a therapy session. So I drove from Pennsylvania down to Nashville, and the therapist that now I had been seeing only with the kids, but for the past couple years, since they had moved to Nashville. So she was available to us for about 4 years at visits. When my children came in, my son had just started driving, so he drove he and my daughter there, and of course, under different circumstances, I would have been, so excited to I couldn't even see the car or anything. But he came in and sat on a little love seat with me and did not make eye contact with me nor look at me the entire time. And my daughter was about 3 feet away from me on another chair, and she just kind of stared at me the whole time with real red face. And we had a very clear conversation with the counselor. She asked both kids if they were how they were doing and if they were at a point where they were interested in trying to make this work, because she explained, your mom's really making an effort coming down here, and if she ever wants to live here or something, we kind of want to get a gauge on where you are. And the kids were just not interested at all. And it really, I could tell how, from talking with their dad before I got there too, how stressful it really was. And just to back up a tiny bit, as they were growing up, and we'd have these really great visits together, and I would go to put them in the car to take them back to their dads, they would start hitting each other in the back seat, and they'd start really kind of acting up and acting like they hadn't acted the whole time they'd been with me. So I knew there was such a big adjustment, like a big impact when they would go back home to their dads each time, whether it was a few days or, just a day, that they kind of would act that way. So I knew it was really stressing them out. My son at that point, 17, my daughter was 13. So they really were just kind of over it and ready to, just not have to deal with me. And at the same time, after the children left, the therapist looked at me and she said, you have done all that you can. You need to live your life now and come back to them at some point in the future when it's right. But it's not now. It's not going to happen now. And you can't, there's nothing you can do to make it happen now. And all those years leading up to it, I kept thinking, like, what kind of a mom am I if I'm not going to keep doing everything I can to see them and to be a part of their lives? Now, mind you, I still send presents. I still send texts all the time, multiple times a week, but those have gone unwritten and unreceived and mailed back for all these years. But I really did believe her that there wasn't anything that I could do at that point that would bring them back to me, because they were so far removed by that point anyway. Through the I studied a lot about parental alienation, so I know that
Yeah.
that's part of the process that they went through,
Yeah, the
significantly.
words
So
we use are alienation and estrangement,
yeah.
and they're very complicated dynamics between families. 100%. When you say that you believed her, I have a follow-up question. So you believed the therapist. Thinking back on that, is it accurate to say, do you think that you believed it because it felt true based on what you were experiencing, as opposed to her trying to convince you of something?
Oh yeah, it felt so true, because I was just in complete turmoil when I would go to see them, because there's nothing, there's a lot of things that happen to us in our lives that are very difficult, but one of the most difficult is grieving living children. And I
Yeah.
was grieving them every time I left them and every time I didn't hear back from them, and every so it I didn't want to keep putting that. It really was a combination of them and not wanting to really put them through what they were going through and let them have however their teenage years looked like, let them have a little bit of normalcy there instead of that. It felt like I felt like an intrusion, and I
Okay.
really did feel that it was time to accept. And now at this point, have been in 12-step recovery for a very long time. So I had people within those communities that were able to tell me that it had happened, something similar had happened to them, and that I really did need to, kind of put on my mask and then other people's mask,
Yeah,
because
put
I had
on your
been.
life mask. Put on your, that is referencing that phrase, like we put on our oxygen mask first before we put on for other people.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So for
Yeah.
many of those years, to put the visual, I was gasping for air, and gasping for any little piece of or nugget from them or from, and I didn't want to live like that anymore. And my life was not, I mean, I was working and things, but I hadn't found my true passion yet. And after that visit with the therapist, after I saw my kids, my parents came to see me in Nashville and kind of intercepted me to absorb some of those emotions, which means a lot to me now because I recently lost my dad. But they were there for me, and I was able to then go back to Pennsylvania, and it's probably one of your next.
It is. No, that it's like I will jump in and ask the question, but you were about to answer it. What has changed in your life as making this intentional decision to work towards acceptance, I'll say?
Yeah, I ended up starting my own business a few months before. I think it was like in July of 2018. So November of 2018 was the last time. So I just got my foot in the door in my business, but I felt once I made that decision, again, it didn't stop texts going out or other communication, at least attempts on my part that continue today. But I really was able to start forgiving myself
Yeah.
for and telling myself that it's okay that I've made this decision. And then when the beauty started coming into my life in other ways, meeting clients that I could help that really needed my assistance in my area of specialties, my relationships with friends and people in my community and where I had grown up got stronger, and I had a lot of support, and I had two still have two very good girlfriends. One has three sons, and the other has two daughters. So in those years when I was in Pennsylvania and really struggling to and not being with my own children, they celebrated, had me celebrate every holiday with them and really pulled me in so that I could experience what it's like, what teenage boys are like and what teenage girls were like. And still to this day, one of them just turned 18 the other day, and it's just neat that they gave me those relationships so that I could have a taste of what it felt like to be, an Aunt Amy to their kids. But it really became, I learned so much about myself and really gave myself permission to try new things and experience life as a strong, smart, productive woman instead of how I had kind of felt all those years of not being enough and not being the right mom, the right wife, the right any of those things. It really, I was able to forgive myself, Aim, and that was huge because
Yeah.
I was given permission to live.
And I just want to throw this out there and then we'll move through it. Somebody asked me something the other day, and I said, I think that one of the biggest gifts that we can give our kids is, and I mean this in the sort of royal global word of kids, like, so the children we have, our stepkids, our cousins, our nephews, kids who live down the street. But the biggest gifts that an adult can give to a kid is the support and the space to be who they are for themselves, right? Without the reflection and the push from somebody else. And I cannot imagine the internal pain actually that you went through to do this, but to allow yourself the space to say, you know, right now, maybe the thing that is letting my kids live their best life is me taking a step back, is not just a gift for yourself, but it may also be a gift for your children. And then I hope that, as you probably hope, that there will be a time in your future where you guys can come together and reconnect as the fully idealized versions of yourselves. It will be a different relationship. It won't be the mom and the 7-year-old and the 4-year-old. It will be adults. But I think that that would be a beautiful thing. In a minute, we're going to do the final questions, but I want to give you a chance to tell people about this business, what you do, and how they can find you.
Great. Yep. So in 2018, I founded Soul Creative, and I am a passionate brand strategist. I love branding. I just absolutely eat up story. So I love hearing about why people are in the business that they're in and who they want to serve. And I love weaving that into their branding. So a lot of people think of branding as just a logo, but it's really the word choices, the who their target audience is. So I love that. And I love design. So I do logo design, website design, and I also have some social media clients where I just manage their socials, which is great because I get to carry that brand all the way through, which I love.
That's very cool. So tell us your website.
It's soulcreativebyamy.com, and it's AIMEE.com.
Exactly. And I will put that in the show notes so that people don't have to spell it out. You are offering, you have a wonderful gift for the audience that I'll share, which is a free branding audit that they can get by going to your website. The easiest way to get these links is to be on the email list for Imperfect Adulting. I call it my email community. That way I send you these links directly to your email. You just click on them. It's great. All right, now I'm going to ask you three questions. Just for fun, not related to anything that we've talked about today. And so the idea is just answer it with whatever comes to mind, okay?
Okay.
If you could take a spontaneous trip anywhere in the world, money is no object, but you have to leave tomorrow, where would you go?
Hawaii,
Oh, I love it.
Kauai, I think, or
Cool.
Maui, because I've been once and it wasn't enough, and it was many, many years ago.
There you go. I mean, there's a reason. It's one of the top
Yeah,
destinations in the
it's just,
world.
yeah, gorgeous and nothing like I'd ever seen before, so.
Very cool. All right. What is something that you do to relax when you are under a lot of pressure?
I have a sticker on my computer that says, I'm not old, but yes, I love to knit. So I do, I like to knit and crochet, which makes me look old, but it's very meditative. I discovered it a few years ago and I'm kind of self-taught and have really enjoyed it. And it really helps me wind down at the end of the night.
Yeah, and you make creations and give them away. I've been the
I
recipient
do. I
of
even,
things you make for people. Yes, exactly.
yes.
So I appreciate that very much. So I write these questions before I interview people, and I'm always stunned when I write a question here that pulls back to something that came up in the. But anyway, what is a favorite song that you love so much that you will sing aloud to when you're by yourself in the car?
Oh, there are so many, but I Hope You're Happy by Blue October. If you haven't heard it, you must listen to it. It is a definite foot stomper, you know, get your foot going. It's a great song and it really has a great message. And I will belt that out every time I hear it.
I love that question. And I had no idea that you were going to say
Yeah.
when I asked you at the beginning that you were a music person. So that
Yep.
always tickles me when I do that. Anyway, that's it. Amy McGrath, thank you so much for being a wonderful guest today on the show.
Thank you, Amy.
Thank you for listening today. I hope that you enjoy the show. And before I go, I want to encourage you to become a bigger part of the conversation. Obviously, subscribe wherever you're listening to the show. Listen to more episodes. That'd be great. Abby again, please write a review and tell your friends about the show. That truly is a great help for getting the show in front of new people. Okay, but more fun for you yourself, head over to imperfectadulting.com and join the email community. You'll get some free stuff right away, and that way you'll begin to get the emails about the podcast. This includes the links for the special offers from the guests, and it's the only way to get that. Also, if you aren't in the mood to listen, I actually include an article directly in those emails. Whee! Now, if you love this and you crave more time with me, Amy, as a coach, a mentor, or just adult to your adult, numero uno, check out The Village. If you have a story you want to share with the listeners, I'd love to hear from you. I have an open application. Just let me know you want it. And that's a wrap for today. Until next time, remember, the journey is the destination. Ralph Waldo Emerson said that, not me. Well, until just now, I did just say it. But what I want you to hear today is that if your adulting journey isn't going the way you expected, that may not mean that you're lost. It may just mean that you're on your way. This is Amy Stone, signing off. The Imperfect Adulting Podcast is created and produced by Amy Stone and Amy Says So. Anything expressed on this show is offered as entertainment, and the views of the guests may not always represent the ideas and viewpoints of the host. That's me. Amy does not intend or hold herself out to provide professional advice or recommendations of any kind. In the end, you and you alone need to make those kinds of decisions based on your personal and individual situation, needs, circumstances, and comfort level.